Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety from the Lighthouse Hockey Podcast Network. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me this evening via Zencaster is my friend Michael Leboff. And Mike, the Islanders have played four games since we last spoke. Two were wins, two were losses. Only one was really very good. But as Barry Trotz said after their game overtime win in Philly last night, he's all about getting points. So they are definitely doing that. But I think the grind of the season is starting to get to them, and having an extra day off this week, which for reasons we'll talk about in a second, I think will ultimately benefit them because they do kind of look a little tired out there.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't going to win, go 9-1 every 10 games. So this was always coming in a little bit. And I think the game against the Flyers, the most recent game, which was, I don't even know what day it is today. Monday or Sunday. I don't know.
Monday. It's weird for them to have games on Monday. Yeah, it was like a Monday. For years, they never did.
Yeah. Today's Tuesday. It was right. Monday. Right. Okay. Now I'm all square. Now I know where I am. So the Monday night win, I think that was actually a pretty important game when we look back to the season, because it didn't allow things to kind of cross into the is it a skid territory. They nipped it in the bud. They got the 2 points. They get the days off now. And it featured two performances, one performance in particular that was one of the best individual performances of the season from Ilya Sorokin, and then it was another goal from Oliver Wahlstrom. I just think when we look back at this game, a game that was very forgettable for 60 minutes outside of Sorokin, when we do look back, we're going to say, wow, that win was probably important, like really important to the season. And where they end up, because if they had lost especially in regulation, which I was white knuckling through that power play at the end there, if they had lost this game in regulation, like we're having a very different conversation. So it's really nice to be able to sit back, relax, and as we're going to talk about this on the show a lot, like I think there's a lot of stuff is going to happen around the Islanders over the next few weeks. And we're at the top of the stretch and we're in a good spot, which is now 3 years running where we're kind of in that spot.
Yeah. We're going to spend the second half of the show talking about potential trade targets. It's a little early for that sort of thing. The trade deadline isn't until about April 12th, but with COVID protocols and quarantines being what they are, I think there's going to be a bit of a jump on these things. We're probably actually one of the last podcasts to talk about it. But let's start with the games. And we've already tipped it off. So let's start with last night's game, the latest one. The Islanders won 2-1 in overtime against the Flyers, their first overtime win of the season and the first overtime win in three tries against the Flyers this year. And even more going back to last year's playoffs. Not a great game by the Islanders, if we're being honest. They were outshot for the game something like, 35-16 or something like that. They did not have a lot of shots in the game. If you look at the underlying stats, it's something like a natural stat trick. It was a little bit closer. A lot of those shots were not from high danger chances. Actually, the Islanders ended up with one more high danger chance than the Flyers did. The Islanders also had more scoring chances than the Flyers did, but shots wise, it was essentially all Flyers. They were throwing stuff at the Islanders from, point shots and things like that. And so it was not a fun game to watch, but it was hands down the best Islanders game for Ilya Sorokin. He turned aside 36 saves. Some of them were flat out spectacular. He made one, like you were saying, on that there was a power play just before the end. Game was tied. At that point, Oliver Wahlstrom had scored about midway through the third period to tie it up. He stopped in front of the net, picked the puck up out of a scrum and roofed it. And he's got 7 goals, which is just super exciting. He sang a little bit on the bench, which is really cool. The Flyers had a power play late. Nick Leddy decided to take his second penalty of the season. And you thought, all right, well, and this is where the luck runs out. But Sorokin was there. He had a couple of great saves there. He stopped Nolan Patrick at one point, who was basically by himself in front. He had a couple of really spectacular sort of sliding saves, and he was great. And if it wasn't for him, the Islanders would not have won that game, hands down. Anthony Beauvillier scored in overtime. There was the first overtime where the Islanders really had the puck the entire time and all the scoring chances. The Flyers had no shots on goal in the overtime. The Islanders had 4, which was the exact amount they had in the first period. So that tells you exactly how that game went. And Bovilla had a wraparound goal. If anybody out there played NHL 94 or its sister games, you'll remember that move well because it works every single time. And Brian Elliott apparently does not know the move well, and he got bit by it. But that game, Bo's not in position to do that, and the Islanders aren't in position to take those 2 points without Sorokin. And I'll be honest, like, I try to think of the last time an Islanders goalie just straight up stole a game. And the closest I could come up with was early in Trotz's first season, before the team really kind of understood the structure and the, you know, demands that they were going to be, that were put on them.
I think a couple of games you're going to say. I have it in my head.
It's not one specific game. So, okay. I mean, I must be forgetting, but there were games early that part of the season where Robin Leonard and Thomas Greiss just stole games and people were like, oh, these guys, they're just getting by on goaltending. It won't last. It won't last. And then before you know it, the Islanders went on to the playoffs and the sweep and all that. What game? I can't remember a specific one.
There was a game against, I'm pretty sure it was the Hurricanes at the end of the first month of the season in Trotz's first year. And I think Greiss was just outrageous. Cause I remember, I think I was watching at a bar, in Rockville Center with some Islander fan friends. And we were just like, this game is just not going to end up well. And they just, it was probably like late October, early November, in this first season. But I think the point you're making is funny because, where those two guys got so much credit and well-deserved credit, like Robin Leonard and Thomas Greiss were superb that season, took home some hardware, very deservingly so. But they were such a storyline for that season. It was last year, like Varlamov and Greiss were a little bit more vanilla, especially in the beginning. Then Varlamov was great in the bubble, and he's been really good this year. But he's just like, there's a little bit less attention. He's not as much of like a lightning rod, and I say that as a term of endearment towards Leonard because we love him. But like he just is not as much of an attention grabber that Leonard was in that season. Because the goaltending's been great, but you're right. Like that was definitely the first time where, because the Islanders have been rarely barraged.
They don't play the kind of game where the goalie has to bail them out. That's why it was kind of weird to see it.
But I mean that the save that I'm going to remember from Sorokin was, and at first I didn't think it was going in. I thought it was going to go wide, but it was like a weird fluttering puck that the puck was behind him when he reached back with it to save it with his glove. And it was just a weird shot, and it was incredible because it was all reflex and all athleticism. And I've been saying, like, he's so operatic. Like he is like, you're watching a symphony of this when this guy's playing goal and you hear the noises. And he was like, that save was just like, you know, at the Bellagio when all those fountains go off in the air or whatever, and the music is playing. That's what that save kind of felt like to me in watching it. It was just like, there was some serious freak athleticism in that. And I think what he's shown now, not only is he comfortable, but he's also, I think now that he is comfortable, he's that athleticism that we've been told about, that kind of crazy IQ of being able to read where the shot's going to come from or where the last deflection's going to come from, is really shining through. And in the beginning of his tenure, I mean, he's won, what, 8 straight games somehow?
Yeah.
Which is crazy, because it didn't feel like that. Because he's had a couple games where, even recently, one against the Sabres and I think one against the Devils, where he didn't play particularly great, but the Islanders won. But now, like the past 2 starts, because his last start against the Flyers too, especially in the third, he was great. But he's like starting to shine through. And the thing is, like in the beginning of the year when he was struggling a little bit, people were like, well, you know, Igor Shesterkin did the same thing and he was able to kind of get used to the NHL right away. Like, no, he played in the AHL first. Like he also got a preseason. Like Sorokin came over, he played in a bubble, which must have been the weirdest experience because he wasn't a part of like the ride really. He was there. And then he came, you know, he stayed here or went back, then came back, quarantined, lived in the Marriott or whatever, and didn't get a preseason. And then was basically thrown to the fire against the Rangers when Kyle Clutterbuck tried to decapitate Semyon Varlamov. Like, so the guy just, he never really got the kind of red carpet rolled out like you would want for your prize goaltending prospect to learn the angles, to understand like what it is like to be in trying to fish out a puck from an NHL scrum where you got, you know, crazy people like Jake Voracek trying to chop your wrist off. Like he didn't get those opportunities in the preseason, and so you got to look at the first 8 or 9 games as his, you know, preseason or his AHL stint that he was never afforded. And if this is like incredible, if we just are getting glimpses of what this guy can be, because oh boy, like, he's fun to watch. He is so much fun to watch, and he's so unassuming at the same time. And his new pads are gorgeous too.
Yeah, the new pads are really, really sweet. And his rebounds were better. Like any rebound was going to an Islander or going off into a corner. He didn't kind of like make himself more trouble, so to speak, which had been a problem earlier in his starts. And he was just phenomenal. And again, he just straight up stole that game. And I was sitting there thinking, like, boy, the Islanders just don't, and I don't mean that as like a bad thing. Like they're never in a position to have that game kind of stolen. But, you know, it's great for Sorokin. Apparently Wahlstrom was joking after the game that, you know, he's always talking about seeing more shots. Well, buddy, you got him. If you want to see more shots, you saw a lot of them last night, and he took care of, you know, for the all of them almost. That's not a criticism, but it's also kind of indicative of how this week went for the Islanders, where like that game was not a well-played game. Again, the numbers skew things a little bit, and if you look at the underlying stuff, it's a little bit closer, but they did not have a ton of urgency. A lot of plays were very, very soft. Like they were just, you know, trying to kind of like, you know, I don't know, like trying to thread the needle through certain guys, and it just kept coming back. At one point, I was just rolling my eyes. Like they just couldn't get out of their own zone. And it wasn't that they didn't have possession. They had plenty of possession. They just kept trying to like squeeze it through the laces on some Flyer skates, and it just kept coming right back. And it's like, dude, stop doing that. What are you doing? Like, stop trying to like, you know, toe pick through four guys and just get the puck on net or dump it in and go get it. And that was kind of how it went for two of the other three games this week too. There was a game on last Monday, a week from yesterday, a week from tonight, where they lost in Washington. They had won 9 in a row going in, and you know, it's a tough test. First period was great, and then the Islanders were like, okay, that's enough, and they just stopped. And it was all caps for the second and third periods. They scored 2 in the second. TJ Oshie got a gift, and then they scored early again in the third. Brock Nelson scored, but the Caps never let them have a chance, and so that was the end of that. A night later, they're playing the Flyers at home, and the Flyers the night before it, of course, we all know by now, got destroyed 9-0 in the Rangers at the Garden. And you thought, okay, well, you know, that streak was over. Now it's time to really take care of a very vulnerable opponent. And they just didn't play well at all. Like they just from the jump, they had to kill a 4-minute penalty because Barzal decided to cross check somebody in the neck, which was a very strange choice. And it was 3-0 Philly after 2. And then they mounted a comeback. And then as soon as they had tied the game, again, the Flyers took a lead like a minute later or so, Oscar Lindbaum with the second goal. And so, you know, there was good things to take out of that game. But if you look at the whole, you're just like, man, these two games, these guys have played, you know, maybe 2 periods of hockey. That's not good. And it was a very strange time. And then Saturday happened and they beat the Flyers 6-1, complete game from top to bottom. It was 4-0 Islanders in the blink of an eye. Kate Cizikas had 2 goals. And I think everybody was just rooting for him to get that third. He had almost an entire game to do it, and he just couldn't grab it. He had chances. He just couldn't get it. But that was probably one of their most complete games of the entire season. The Flyers had nothing at any point. They had 4 shots on goal, I think, in the third period, which is, you know, when you're down 4 goals at that point, there's not much you can do. And then the Islanders got 2 gift goals after that. Carter Hart and the Flyers D just conspired to just literally hand Beauvillier and Bailey goals. So of the 4 games this week, really only one was what you would consider a complete game. One had to be stolen by a goalie, which is why I said what I said at the top. Like, these guys look tired. I was watching Barzal yesterday, and he might have been at the end of a long shift. I don't know. But he just looked tired. And, like, we've seen Barzal now a lot, and we know what he looks like when he's on. And he just wasn't on. And I know Leo Komarov was playing on his wing, so there could have been that. But you know, we're getting into, this is, you know, they only have about 23 games left. And so this is sort of like the dog days of the season. And it's not time for a letdown. So as cool as it was to see Sorokin steal that game, this is 3 games in a row now, or, you know, 3 out of 4 games where they just haven't played that well. And I'm hoping that the day off that they got from today, they were supposed to be playing right now, but the Bruins had a number of guys on the COVID protocol list. Game got canceled. Thursday's game in Boston, we still don't know. They're going to try and practice tomorrow. I guess we'll hear from them then if it's safe. Noah Dobson is still on the COVID list. So it's happening now. But, you know, one small, tiny silver lining is that they get a day off. And boy, it looks like they need it because schedule's not getting any easier from here on out.
There are some extenuating circumstances that are making them look a little bit more fatigued. And I think we're definitely starting to see the effects of not having a first line that can carry the bulk of the offensive gusto for sure, because having Lee, Barzell and Eberle playing in the form that they were all season, that takes off so much of a burden from the guys down the roster, and it just makes life so much easier. But without them, obviously you're going to be leaning on stuff, and the Leo Komarov thing is just, I mean, at this point, like, it is what it is, right? Like, we know the Islanders have Leo Komarov, and they're going to have Leo Komarov for forever, who knows. And so you just got to kind of like live to, and I was, this is a little hypocritical, because in the beginning of the year, I was getting so mad, especially during that Washington series where he single-handedly could end up costing the Islanders the division. If, you know, the four points that he handed Washington end up being the difference. But at this point, you just kind of like sit back and laugh. Cause like you being angry about Leo Komarov being on the first line, isn't going to change anything. And it's unfortunate, because what the Islanders need is on that line is a player with much more gravity than Leo has. He's got a lot of levity. They need gravity, right? They need someone who can kind of suck up the resources of the defenders and create space. And Leo doesn't do that. He took an Islanders 3-on-2. Yes, an Islanders 3-on-2, and then turned it into a 2-on-2 just by like deserting the 3-on-2 yesterday, which I just have never ever seen. I don't know. I just don't know where he was going. Sometimes it feels like he's just playing without a stick too. He just doesn't need one. He just like goes out and just like buzzes around the ice and doesn't ever touch the puck. So it's like he doesn't even need the stick. He just is doing his own thing, whatever. But yeah, I mean, the games did, they looked ugly. That the one game that wasn't ugly, and when you're rooting for a team like the Islanders right now, like in the regular season, when you right now, like they look like they're gonna make the playoffs, you got to kind of like embrace the moments, and the moment on Saturday was amazing with Thomas Hickey playing.
Yeah.
So like that, I mean, we've said it for so long, like the Islanders, we just don't understand why people don't root for them, because they should be a likable team on the surface. Like you said, like when the Islanders win, like Greg Wyshynski always said that there should be an Islanders nostalgia boom or whatever. And there just never has been, but it was nice to see people were paying attention to like Thomas Hickey on Saturday night. Cause, yeah, that was a moment of the season too, that like you'll look back on. And it felt a little surreal, honestly, like for me and probably for a lot of fans. So I can't imagine what it felt like for him. Just to like see him out there wearing number 34, playing well, like he hasn't missed a beat. There's not really much else you could say. Like everybody after the game kind of just soaked it up and like, you know, saw what he said, and he said some really heavy emotional stuff, and it's like, wow, like, yeah, like, yeah, that's our guy. Like, good. The fact that he stuck with this team and like rolled with the punches and never, never really seemed to like make a peep. I think like Sam Bennett requested a trade. Like all these guys request trades, and I guess everybody's life is different and whatever. But the fact that like Thomas Hickey and Sebastian Aho, and I know Sebastian Aho doesn't have like the power or the leverage to do that. I mean, he could. I mean, if some of the players are requesting trades, sometimes are ridiculous. But like the fact that those two guys didn't, and like are kind of just like sticking with the program, and Hickey especially, who could be an asset to a team that like the Red Wings or Senators who have these young players. The fact that they didn't just kind of tells you more and more about this, or like where this organization is in this regime, and the respect that these players have for it. Because the fact that these guys kind of came in after years, literal years of not playing, and just did their thing was kind of awe inspiring, especially Hickey.
Yeah, Trotz said afterwards. Yeah, I mean, if you're looking for the most positives from the last week, that the 4 points are obviously huge. Wahlstrom has been great. Sorokin has been great. But I mean, number one, if we're being honest, is the Hickey story, because it's great seeing him out there again. My favorite thing, and I mean, we've said this probably 100 times on this very podcast, he's a guy, he's just a smart, like, eloquent guy. And he just, the way he explains the game in intermission interviews, you know, normally those things are kind of just like some out of breath player talks about, like, you know, wanting it more than the other team or whatever. But like, Hickey always gets into, you know, why a play happened. He's good at breaking stuff down. He's a smart dude. And it was nice to hear him after a game talk about the game and talk about, like you said, the emotional toll, things he's been going through, the passing of his brother, unfortunately, the concussion, losing his spot, playing in the AHL, you know, more injuries. It's been rough. And for him to be out there playing well, team won. And he's just a hugely liked member of the team. And Trotz was saying that everybody in the room loves him. They're pulling for him. And, you know, I think that's what it comes down to. I know it's such a cliche, but like, this is a very tight knit group and they pull for each other even when they're not playing. And, you know, even going back to the bubble, like you mentioned before with Sorokin, like, it certainly didn't sound like they were like, you know, not that we would know because we weren't there, but like, it doesn't sound like they were kind of like ostracizing him, or he was like, you know, taking his time to like kind of get his feet wet. He was in the ping pong tournament. He was with everybody. You know, I mean, Pageau had barely been, Green had barely been on the team at that point too. And they're all kind of, they're all in, they're all ready to you know, play for each other. So it was cool seeing Hickey out there. I would like to see him get more time when Dobson hopefully comes back. I mean, getting off the protocol, he's been on the protocol list now for over a week. So even if he gets, I know the dude is 20 years old. He's probably fitter than you or I or most of the people listening to this. But, you know, when he comes off of that COVID list, he's not going to just jump right onto the ice. Like, he's going to need time to recover. I think we're going to see more of Hickey. And I think, you know, even when Noah can come back, I don't see why Hickey wouldn't play. Although, you know, there's always handed stuff. But he hasn't really lost a step. He looked like he's supposed to look. And it was cool to see. And yeah, I think, you know, he wants to be here. These are his friends. He's been here for, you know, whatever, 6 or 7 years. And it was cool to see him out there. It was weird seeing him with a different number, though. I got to be honest, like, I don't, you know, read the lineups. And for a few minutes, I was like, what the hell number is he wearing out there? Because I'm like, oh, there's not 4 and there's no 14. What is going on? And it's like, oh, 34. Oh, all right. And I was like, oh, that's the old Berard number, I guess.
Yeah. I said after the game, like, that game really did have a profound impact. Like, I mean, it just in the moment, I was like, I kind of want a Thomas Hickey 34 number, you know, jersey now. It was weird, especially weird because Green was wearing 4. So like, it just, you know, you're like, oh, is that Hickey or Green? And they do.
And they're just two so different players too.
Yeah. Right? You're right. They approach the game the same way, which is, you know, being smart and leaning into that. But yeah, they do not, you know, look the same on the ice for sure. Yeah. It kind of reminded me of when Radek Martínek was wearing 4 too. Like, he went, he went from 24 to 4 when he came back, when they resurrected him that one for a little while. You know, like, it was just like, took a little getting used to, but once you did, it was fun to watch, him play. And I was saying this to my buddy Mike earlier today, like, I don't remember, and I might be wrong, but I don't remember when Hickey left the lineup. I know it was an injury, but even before that injury, and I know people were clamoring for Taves to play because we were very excited for him. He was going to be the shiny new toy. Hickey never really like cratered. His game never really went away. He just happened to get hurt, and that was the end of it, basically. He was never bad, I don't think, at least in my memory. Like, so that's, and him playing this well kind of like alleviates a little bit of a burden on Lamoriello. And we'll talk in the next section about that. Like, you know, the Islanders now have what looks like a reliable seventh defenseman, and Aho wasn't great against the Flyers, but he was, and I think it was that the game he scored in, actually, he didn't play great in his own zone. But he looked fine. Like, it's not like he was going to cost them. It didn't look like he was going to cost, you know, the Islanders games, and which is fine. So they have, it's not a pressing need if Thomas Hickey plays like that for the next couple of games here, because that was something that I would have thought they would want to address, but they might not need to, which is good, you know, because they're going to need to save up the capital that they're going to need to make a trade elsewhere. So good on you, Thomas Hickey, huh?
Yeah. They'll be better with Dobson, and you know, Green has looked a bit off since Dobson hasn't been on the ice. And obviously, like we just said, the last couple of games. They haven't quite looked themselves, but that might be due to fatigue, not necessarily, you know, Dobson being out of lineup. But that's a good segue. So let's take a break. We'll come back on the other side and we'll talk about some trade targets and some trade proposals, some of which are from other dimensions, I think. I'm not sure. So we'll look into them when we come back on the other side. Our favorite sponsor is VintageIceHockey.com, where you can get t-shirts, hoodies, and mugs featuring over 100 classic hockey logos. There's a new jersey on the horizon, New Haven Blades. It looks pretty sweet, so take a look over there. They also have our Al Arbor t-shirts, which you can get, an hour portion of which goes directly to the Center for Dementia Research. So go to VintageIceHockey.com and use the code Lighthouse15, and you could save yourself 15%. VintageIceHockey.com. Okay, well, so
the New Haven Blades. Sorry to interrupt. The New Haven Blades weren't. I know the Islanders had a minor league team in New Haven, right? Didn't they?
Wasn't that the Beast of New Haven?
The Beast of New Haven. That's what it was called. I was remembering they had that, a team, yeah.
That's a classic, and I think there might be some Beast of New Haven stuff at the site too. You should check it out. Yeah. If not, I'm sure Kevin is working on it. A legendary.
New Haven's an interesting place, man. Emily used to work at Yale New Haven Hospital in their ER, and it's like. First of all, I mean, the pizza there is astounding. Everybody, most people listening to this podcast, we're very blessed to live in the pizza belt. Like when people ask me, where's your favorite place to eat pizza on Long Island? I'm like, you can just close your eyes and walk into one and you'll be fine. Like it's not a big deal. And the same goes, I think, New Jersey and the city for the most part. And New Haven is the same way. There's just some great pizza up there. But anyways.
Yeah. Actually a very rich, hockey and pizza history in New Haven. So
and hamburgers, the birthplace of the hamburger too.
Yeah, because of Yale. Yeah, you're right. Yeah, that's true. I've heard that. So that my favorite food to eat, the hamburger, even more than pizza. So, but yeah, Beast of New Haven. If you have never seen the Beast of New Haven logo, check it out. It's got some fluorescent green in there. It's like a gargoyle. It's pretty awesome. So the NHL trade deadline this year is April 12th. And this is not a normal year. Obviously, there's, you know, quarantines and protocols in place, depending on what state people are in and things like that. And so I think it's right. We're right to assume that there might be some deals happening a little bit earlier this year, if there's going to be any deals at all. Arthur Staple and AJ Malesko already talked about potential deals on No Sleep Till Belmont. But Arthur, actually, just before we came on, posted an article about you know, trade proposals, kind of like The Athletic does this thing where it's like, who says no? And, you know, people send in their trade proposals and you know, he talks to a couple of executives and he says, you know, kind of gets their take on things. I was joking about this before this week. And I think I you know, as happens on Twitter a lot, it got misconstrued. When I said that Lou is always the person who says no in these situations, I meant it's because I don't think he like takes kindly to people being like, I got a great idea. You should trade these two guys. Like, he don't do that. Like, if you see Lou at a bagel shop or a restaurant, please don't run up to him and like offer him, you know, your best Philip Forsberg trade proposal, because you will get removed by security. Like, don't do that. And so I really just feel like a lot of these are just kind of like, you know, riffing out in the wind. I'll be honest. I'm sure a lot of people that sent these in probably listen to this show. Some of these trade proposals are really bad. They weren't going to have, I don't have to be an executive to tell you that some of the, you know, nobody's taking Ladd, Komarov and you know, a third round pick for Philip Forsberg or whatever it is. But I think some of these guys here do have potential, and, we'll start with the obvious ones. It's Kyle Palmieri, Taylor Hall. These guys are on teams that aren't going to the playoffs, Hall in particular. I mean, that the Sabres are just a complete shit show from the get-go. They fired their coach. No, everybody stinks. Hall stinks. You know, the thing about Taylor Hall is he has less goals right now than Noah Dobson does. Like Hall right now, the funny thing about this trade article is that almost all of them have Anthony Beauvillier in it. He has 4 goals. Taylor Hall has 2. Like, what are we trading here? And the other thing about Hall too is now I'm just kind of off on a rant, but like I was thinking about this. So people are like, oh, Taylor Hall, he's so great. It'd be the perfect addition. And he would be. Like, I'm not saying that the Islanders shouldn't go out and get Taylor Hall. Here's the thing that kind of bothers me about him. So he had a bunch of good years in Edmonton, all, you know, 20 or more goals. That's great. He gets traded to Jersey. His first year was very mediocre. He had a whole, like, heart-to-heart with John Hines. Next year, wins the MVP, was fantastic. He was a machine that year. The next year, he was hurt. Not a good season. And then the next year, he was there for half the season and he got traded. He goes to Arizona, was not good. He's in Buffalo, he is not good. Again, I'm not saying the Islanders shouldn't try and get Taylor Hall because he probably could help, but I don't know what Taylor Hall they'd be getting. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if he's a slam dunk kind of addition that people are kind of making him out to be, but maybe that's just me.
I think it's going to depend on the fit, right? With him, because he might go to a team and just be great. But I could also see him going to a team and just not fitting into the system or whatever. And I like to think that the Islanders would be pretty a good place for him. And maybe this is just me convincing myself to get him on the team. But like, just because you're, if Lou Lamoriello and Barry Trotz go get Taylor Hall, it's because they think he would work. And I trust them to think that, right? So if he ends up coming, if Kyle Palmieri ends up coming, you know, whoever it is, like this, it was a decision made by these two guys who Barry Trotz more so than Lamoriello, like have really earned the benefit of the doubt to make these moves. So that's my thinking at least. And he's the good thing about it is like, you can't be getting Taylor Hall at a cheaper time than you are right now. Like the Sabres, what they did was a little bit shrewd, which was sign him to a 1-year deal. If things go south, and then you can probably, you know, recoup a lot by trading Taylor Hall at the trade deadline. Well, of course, with it being the Sabres, that plan, which was well thought out and probably, you know, good management, blew up in their face. So, like, who knows what the cost is going to be? Because sure, you're not going to be paying for whatever 2018 MVP Taylor Hall, but you're also not going to be paying for this version of Taylor Hall. But I think it'll be closer to this version. So I don't think the price is going to be crazy. And his game, like, what the Islanders need, and I said this before about Komarov, like, Anders Lee is like a planet on the ice. He just has this crazy pull because of his size and his forechecking ability, the chaos he creates in front of the net. He's just so hard to deal with. You know, if you have that guy leaning against you, against the boards, like he's a huge dude. Like that just, he takes up a lot of effort and space and wears people down, which makes life easy for Barzal and not to mention Eberle, who's when he has space to operate is great. Like when he's coming off the boards and can stick handle in on goal, like we see what he can do. But they need a player, I think, like that. And there are, and Hall, I think, is like, he's not a like for like switch for Anders Lee. There's very few people who are, but he will require attention from defenses because he's obviously a high end talent. So for that reason, it's a great trade and I wouldn't mind. But as we've said on the show before, I think the way fans look at things are like, I want this guy, he'd be great, whatever. But when you're dealing with the Islanders and Lou Lamoriello, you need to basically put yourself out of the equation. And you need to think as best you can like Lamoriello does, which is very different from everyone else. So it's like you need to figure out who is this guy's zero, what he values, what he thinks like this team is all about, like the ethos of this team, and like will this person fit into the culture, and I just don't know what he would think about Taylor Hall at this point. So it is an interesting question.
Yeah. That is, and maybe it is about fit and usage. But then at the same time, like I said, you know, his best season, his literally MVP season came when he just kind of did everything for the Devils. So I wonder if maybe that's the best fit for him, but you know, he's really not doing everything for the Sabres right now. But you're all right about like the cost is probably pretty cheap because at this point now we've heard stories that Hall likes Buffalo. Maybe he wants to stay there and it's entirely possible. But, you know, I think at this point the Sabres would happily take anything. And, you know, I don't think it would even cost a first round pick, although, you know, they could jack up the price, whatever they want. I did have this thought, though, and I thought you'd appreciate this. Like, so Kevin Adams is the general manager of the Sabres. It's his first year. And I kind of get a feeling, and I wouldn't be surprised if this happened. And obviously I don't know what I'm talking about, but I could just kind of picture this happening where you know, he's going into this trade deadline saying, okay, well, I can cash in Taylor Hall. I can get myself a bunch of picks and prospects. And, you know, he holds out for like a first or like some company that was a really good prospect. And maybe he takes a bunch of calls and he's, you know, keeps trying to like haggle with these guys. And then before you know it, it's the trade deadline and everybody's moved on. And whatever the 2020 equivalent of Sebastian Kohlberg and a third round pick ends up getting traded for Taylor Hall. And everybody sits around going, what the hell just happened? Obviously, longtime listeners will remember that was the package Islanders, the package, quote unquote, that the Islanders got for Thomas Vanek from the Canadiens that year, that they had to dump him. And like, it feels like this situation where like he could accidentally just overplay his hand, outweigh his market, and then get, you know, not a ton for this guy who really should probably get you something, at least something tangible, at least, you know, a pick higher than three, I guess.
That's the thing with Hall. It's like there's so much to unpack with the Sabres being the one. Like you're dealing with the most inept organization right now against Lou Lamoriello and the Islanders, who, and so like, and a player who also like his value is definitely in question. He definitely makes a team better, so the Islanders would need to give something up. I think you know, I would love Taylor. Like I said, I would love Taylor Hall to be on the Islanders. I just think in my head, figure out like what the Islanders are looking for. I just feel like he's going to end up elsewhere, and that might be back in Buffalo, where he says he loves. Whether you believe him, it's like it's not everybody is Ilya Bryzgalov and Chris Pronger. When you know, Bryzgalov is like it's freaking freezing in Edmonton. That's why he doesn't like it. Why you have to be mad? Like this is no one's gonna say stuff like that. But hell, you know, if Taylor Hall re-ups in Buffalo, something tells me that contract will be a disaster for them too. you know, down the line. But if you're asking me, I think he'll end up getting traded. Yes, I have a feeling the Islanders end up with somebody else, which is probably a good sign if you want Taylor Hall, and he'll be on the Islanders in, you know, 4 hours.
So let's talk about guys that aren't Taylor Hall. So you mentioned Kyle Palmieri before, another UFA. You know, I don't know what the Devils want. He's a guy, if we've been hearing, you know, stories about Hall wanting to re-up in Buffalo, we're definitely hearing things about Kyle Palmieri wanting to re-up with the Devils. And, you know, I don't see why he wouldn't. I could totally see that happening. I could see him getting traded to the Islanders and then signing with the Rangers in the offseason, because that's just how it goes sometimes with these teams. So I don't know. He was born on the island. He grew up in Jersey, as far as I know. He's a guy. I don't know. I don't picture him leaving anywhere. I don't think he would be a good pickup for the Islanders. I've been a fan of his for a long time. I can't see it. I think he makes sense. I think probably the Devils could get something, but I think at the end of the day, they're probably just as soon re-sign him. One thing we should mention, though, and the reason that we can talk about guys coming to the Islanders is because of Anders Lee being on long-term injured reserve. We believe it's an ACL injury. He said it was an ACL injury, but he's going to need surgery and he's going to be out long-term. Like he ain't coming back probably even for the playoffs. So because of that, the Islanders have him on long-term injured reserve, and it means that they can use his cap hit to fill in the gaps, much like they did with Johnny Boychuk earlier. So I think they have over $7 million now, basically, that they can kind of play with, which opens up a lot of possibilities. Now, the problem is that once Lee comes back and he's got six more years left on this deal, those guys aren't going to fit under the cap. So the UFAs make the most sense because you can trade, probably won't cost you much, get that guy, bring him in here for the playoffs. And then, well, if he walks, he walks. And then you don't have to worry about paying him. And you just pop Lee back into his old spot. So guys like Hall and Palmieri are going to be at the top of the list. There are a couple of other guys that have term that I don't think are coming here. Philip Forsberg is one. I can't see it happening. Ricard Raquel, Sam Reinhart, Sam Bennett. Like Sam Bennett's not what they need, but like you said before, he requested a trade. I can't see them getting anybody with term. Like unless it's some kind of big blockbuster move where maybe they do shed a Ladd and a Komarov and some kind of miracle from God. I can see that happening. I cannot see them trading Anthony Beauvillier. And like literally all of these things on Arthur's article here talk about trading Bo. I can't see it. I just, you know, he kills penalties. He gets along with everybody. He's been here. He's only 23, right? Or 24 years old. Not even 24 years old. He's BFFs with your best player. He's BFFs with his center. Everybody loves Bo. I get it. He's streaky. He's tiny. He goes for weeks sometimes without doing anything. But he's just, I don't see why they would trade him. I just don't, you know, a lot of these trade proposals are for him, for a guy who's kind of almost the same thing, only older and more expensive.
Like, I think at this point, I would rather have Beauvillier than, you know, I think Victor Arvidsson's a great little player, but like, I would much rather have the guy who's been in the system and knows it and has performed in big moments for this team than anyone else. I would actually be a little disappointed if, unless it's like something bananas where like they get someone incredible out of nowhere, you know, that like Johnny Gaudreau or something crazy, like that if they lost Beauvillier, because they should just be, this team should just be adding. They shouldn't be deleting anything. Like, Anthony Beauvillier is a very good player. He's a great middle six wing. He can do a lot of different things for you. Like, they should just be adding somebody. And they should not be like deleting anybody, you know, maybe aside from like the Kiefer Bellows or Sebastian Ajos of the world. like right. Fringe players, whatever, but like Anthony Beauvillier should not be leaving this team. It would be a little disappointing. The names, like, I think that's the thing. Like, I know Elliot Friedman said this on 31 Thoughts. Like, they're going to, I think what I'm hoping for, because a lot of the name, like, I wouldn't mind Palmieri. His actual numbers aren't great, but if you look below, he's below his like surface level stats. Like, they're he's been pretty good. He just isn't, I think his shooting percentage is a career low or whatever, but I wouldn't mind either of them. I don't think like the needle mover. He wouldn't be the needle mover that people would, you know, clamor for, I guess, compared to Hall. He's just not as sexy a name, but I think he'd maybe be equally as effective as Hall would be with this team. And like Michael Granlund, who for some reason people don't realize he's really good in front of the net. He's not a big guy, but he's nifty in front of the net. He's a good forechecker too. So he's someone that I could see fitting in well, but I really do wonder, like, if I could see it going a couple different ways where, like, Lou goes for somebody like Milton. This isn't going to ever happen, but like a Milan Lucic type, right? Like a guy who's got the ring on his finger, who's a character guy who people love to say is grit and makes everybody, you know, he's grit personified and makes everybody on Islanders Twitter like freak out and want to fire Lou again. Or, you know, he goes for, you know, the home run guys like the Philip Forsberg, or it's going to be someone we see like that we've been seeing on these lists now every day. You wake up, you refresh Twitter to see if the Islanders have traded for Taylor Hall or Kyle Palmieri or Nick Foligno. But like, it's fun to be in this situation again. And it's 2 years in a row now that the Islanders are holding some heavy cards at the table at the trade deadline. And I do wonder about the defense. And one defenseman that just like pops into my mind, and this is just somebody who I've always wanted for a couple reasons. One, because I like him as a player. He's past his prime, and would be nothing more than like a seventh or eighth defenseman. But it would bring closure to the Alex Karpetsev trade, which so Nicholas Jalmerson, because wow. when they traded Karpetsev for traded for Karpetsev from the Blackhawks, that was a pick. Jarmelson was the pick the Blackhawks used in that trade. So that would be nice. Some closure there would be nice.
I don't think I knew that. Yeah. Wow. How about that?
Yeah. But like, I could see like stuff like that, but yeah, we've listed them all. Like it's an exciting time, but who knows? Like now everyone's talking about Dustin Brown too. Like it's.
Yeah. So Friedman threw Dustin Brown's name out.
Yeah. Would he be like the guy that you would make you the most mad if the Islanders traded for him?
Yeah, for sure. not a huge fan. I know he's having a great year. He's 36. He's making a lot of dough, and he's another guy with another year on his contract. So I just can't see it happening. The other thing about Beauvillier, because I forgot, he's an RFA at the end of the year. So they are going to need to sign up to a new contract. I do feel like they could get him under, and I think a lot of the kind of worry about getting him under revolves around getting rid of some guys who are taking up cap space. And so I think it's less about getting rid of Bo and cashing out on him than maybe trying to move some of these guys or whatever that they can't move and just, I don't know, trying to make something work. That's just, I don't know, that's probably, again, me being too hopeful, but I don't want to get rid of Bo. I just like him too much. But I'm going to throw a couple of names out there that I think people aren't thinking about. And they show up a little bit on Arthur's list, but I think there's a couple out there that are also kind of possibles because they're under the radar. And I don't think Lou thinks people are watching them. Oh, Nick Foligno was another one, by the way, another UFA, but all of a sudden the Blue Jackets have put together a bunch of wins and they're back in the playoff hunt. So I would cross Foligno off the list. He also probably is going to stay in Columbus. The first guy I think about is Ryan Getzlaf. Now, UFA, he's making a lot of dough, but you know, you're looking at a guy who's been in the league for 15 years. He's been the captain. He did win a Stanley Cup when he was young and he had hair. And I do feel like he can kind of be a little bit analog to Lee. I think he can play on the first line with Barzal and Eberle. He's huge. He's like a massive guy. So he does play that sort of spot. He's not afraid to stand in front of the net. His numbers aren't great, but again, he's kind of older. And I also think though that they can get him pretty cheap and bring him over. And if he walks at the end of the year, well, and it costs you, you know, a third rounder or a second rounder, I think that would probably be a price to pay.
And it would be good for us because that would provide us with, you know, years of callbacks to the, remember when Ryan Getzlaf was on the Islanders?
He would be a 100% all time. Like, you know, you see the jersey out there and you're like, oh shit, I completely forgot about that guy. The other benefit to acquiring Getzlaf is you wouldn't need to worry about him getting a haircut because he has no hair. So there you go. It works out for everybody. But yeah, I just feel like, you know, the Ducks aren't going anywhere. Like the Ducks need help. They need help. They have like really two good players right now. And, one of them is not Kevin Shattenkirk, who, actually grew up a huge Ducks fan in New Rochelle, New York. I don't know if anybody knew that. That's a joke. Anyway, so he's one guy I think that's kind of an out of the box choice. Another guy. And, I put this into, the Athletic thing, but I don't know if Art didn't see it or it was too stupid and even care, probably a little bit of both. Andrew Cogliano is a guy who's playing for Dallas. He's been with Dallas for a long time. Another UFA. Numbers aren't really great, but I feel like he can play sort of the third line wing spot a little bit better. He's not a first line player, but I feel like he can probably take the sort of depth spot, which would allow Barry Trotz to move guys like a Wahlstrom or Beauvillier up to the top line in place of Lee. And maybe, you know, get a little bit of traction that way. Again, you know, let's say he puts Beauvillier on that line with Barzal and Eberle. Like obviously Beauvillier and Lee are two completely different players, but at least those guys know each other. And I feel like they can find the chemistry and make it work. And then you slot Cogliano in a line with Pageau and it would also probably work. I can't imagine he would cost more than a fourth round pick. You know, I mean, I don't think he's going to stay in Dallas.
I think the Islanders are going to like shop in that area too. Just for depth reasons, like Blake Como, two old
friends. Como is like a good one too. Yeah.
And Big Game Brass, like Derek Brassard. Like if the Islanders traded a six round pick, a fifth, whatever pick for Derek Brassard to come back and just be a plug and play bottom six winger for this team, I'd be thrilled. I mean, I think so would a lot of the players on the team because he seemed to be pretty popular, especially among the French Canadian contingent on the Islanders. So like I don't think it might not necessarily be those guys, but I think that that was probably originally where the Islanders were going to make their only move if they made one in the trade deadline, which is in that like bottom six wing role, the Sam Gagner types. But now obviously with the Lee thing, people are kind of just forgetting about that, but that's still kind of a need because you're going to need, you see it all the time in the playoffs. Players get hurt and you're going to need guys to fill in. Carter Verhaeghe basically earned himself a big contract and is paying off really well with the way he played in the bubble. And he wasn't, you know, an everyday player. Like you need guys like that. The Lightning showed us how important players like that are going to need to play could end up playing like 13, 14 games in a playoff run are. And Derek Brassard fits that bill. And obviously Como and Cogliano do too, because they were in the Stanley Cup last year.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So it's like Sam Gagner and you know, even Bobby Ryan to some extent. Like those kind of players are going to be sought after too. And so don't freak out when the Islanders maybe make a trade for someone like one of those guys before making a splash if they do.
Yeah, I forgot about Ryan. You know, his best days are behind him. He had a kind of super hot start for Detroit and has cooled down considerably. But yeah, I could see him too. And I think, yeah, what we're trying to get at is I feel like the targets are a little bit lower on the pecking order. Like Hall, Palmieri, those are sort of, even Granlund, like are kind of like the biggest fish out there. And I think maybe the Islanders go there, but like, I feel like between their salary cap situation, the amount of assets that they can expend, because let's face it, nobody wants what they're selling outside of, you know, first round pick. They have the extra second next year, so maybe they can make that work. Those are the two best assets that they have. Like, you know, people like including Kiefer Bellows in HR. Okay, people really aren't going to want Kiefer Bellows. Like, he's a nice player. He's had a couple of nice games, but like, I don't see him going in any of these sort of like, you know, blockbuster win now moves.
He's not going to be the centerpiece of the trade. Right? The Islanders' centerpiece of a trade is their first round pick.
Their first round.
That's exactly. Like Kiefer Bellows is you need to look at him as more of a complimentary piece than anything else. So that's a problem. The Islanders just don't have that that like prized prospect. But that's not even really a huge thing in the NHL. Like think about. It's pretty rare for these prospects like to be traded in a salary cap world. Like Eric Brandstrom, when he was traded from Vegas to Ottawa, everyone was like that he was the big piece, but he's been good, but he's not like a star. He's not what should turn into Mark Stone. So it's just like people are very wary of trading for a prospect as the crown jewel of a package. Which is, I guess, you know, why we're seeing Beauvillier Islander fans knowing that and saying like, oh, well, you know, Beauvillier will be the guy. And as we were saying before the show, he's the new Bailey, even though there still is Josh Bailey is still the old Josh Bailey.
Please stop trying to trade Josh Bailey. Josh Bailey is not getting sent anywhere in a trade. We've been over this. We've been over this for about 6 years now.
That's a great, like, that'd be a fun thing to do or someone to do with good connections to Garth Snow is be like, how close were you ever to trading Josh Bailey? Because let me tell you something. New York Islander fans were close to trading him every day since 2009, whenever he was drafted. 2008, when he was drafted, he's been close to being traded. So yeah. I would love to know. I would really love to know how close he's been.
I do feel like every team has that guy. Like, you know, we've just seen the Flyers three times. And the best part of any Flyers game is I get to go on a podcast with my friend Kelly at Broad Street Hockey. And we talk about that. And you'd be surprised at how, you know, how there's an analog for everything. Like we were joking about how everybody feels that their team is the one that always gives up some guy's first career goal, his first career shutout, his first win, all that kind of stuff. And I bet every team has that guy that was always, this is the guy, you know, oh yeah, we got to throw him in. Nobody wants it. Like, and they end up staying there forever. Like, I'm sure that there have been a ton of, you know, trade proposals for, like, you know, I guess Gostisbehere would probably be for the Flyers just to pull out a name, you know, but he's still there. Like, he's not going, he hasn't gone there yet. So he's still there. But yeah, I just, you know, the Islanders don't have a whole lot of schkarol. They don't have a whole lot of capital to move around. And so I think we need to be kind of measured in our, you know, hopes. But at the same time, the other thing too is like, I wonder, How much is a first round pick this year even worth? Like, these guys are all doing a lot of video scouting. You know, I wonder if a lot of picks for next year are going to move.
I think a good thing is that I don't think that there's a huge difference in where the Islanders will be picking and where, like, you know, the sixth overall pick, let's say, which is good, right? So it's like, basically it's not a huge deal if it's, you know, they're picking late in the first round, because, you know, if someone's a first round talent, it's probably established by now. You just don't know where they'd fit in that first 31 players. So it's you're basically just kind of closing your eyes and picking from a small pool of really, really talented 17-year-old kids and hoping yours is the one. And the more tickets that you acquire, the better chances one of them turns into, you know, a Matt Barzal or Erik Karlsson in like the middle of a first round. But, yeah, but that does also complicate things too. Like, we just found out that there is talk. I love that I was really, really trying hard not to make fun of the media or the Canadian media. But I love that this episode, because we just do it so much. But I can't let this go with that basically there was this contingent of Canadian writers who wanted to do two drafts in a row. And like they were pushing the idea, and I guess there was like a little bit of traction behind it. But the reason that they wanted to do it was because they wanted to turn like the draft weekend, the next draft weekend, into this big party for them all in Montreal. Like they were all making jokes, like, "Oh, we'll be at Stogie's all night, like the night before." Imagine a whole two drafts. Like it'll be like 6 days in Montreal. That'll be great for us. Like, yeah, that's what the league's thinking when they're making these decisions. Like, let's make sure we can these guys could have a good time in whatever city we're in. They're out of their minds.
Where did you see that?
Elliot Friedman said that they were thinking about doing two drafts in a row. It would be the 2021 draft and the 2022 draft would both be next summer, in the same, you know, 4-day stretch. And he had this vision of it being like a big hockey festival. I think he was talking about this in one of the 31 Thoughts podcasts from before the season. Yeah. And they were talking about the draft or whatever, but the point being that nobody knows what this draft is really going to look like or yield, especially compared to other ones. So that does like throw other things into question. So it's going to be strange, but it's fun to hear that the Islanders, and this was like last year. And also like Lou Lamoriello did a great job last year at the deadline. Like he got JG Pageau. Like, so that's great. Like if he can do that again, if he can find the right fit again, we should believe in that at least. And it's great that it's the Islanders and like the Leafs are like the two quote unquote, like big buyers right now in the market. Mm. So, you know, that there's definitely some animosity there still, with Lou and then his old regime. So I'm sure that if, you know, he's spoken to David Poile. He said, like, look, if you're going to trade Philip Forsberg to Toronto, you call me first and you make sure that I can try to match, or I'll let you go. I'll let them, you know, overpay for him.
The majority of the animosity right now, I think, is between Steve Simmons and the Maple Leafs captain. And if you don't know what I'm talking about, I'll throw a link in the article for this podcast and you can read all about it and laugh. Because it's very funny, even though it's Steve Simmons.
Well, but it's that's the world, you know. When decisions like the one that guy made turn your world upside down, and our new world without him is that we like Steve Simmons.
So I know. Go figure.
Yeah,
this guy wouldn't piss on Nassau Coliseum if it was on fire. Meanwhile, he's like our best friend now. Every couple of weeks, he turns in something that's like, man, Steve Simmons is awesome. Yeah. but we'll have to see where that goes. I don't know. I don't think Philip Forsberg is going anywhere, but I did. I will admit that I did look up. Wait a minute. When he was traded from the Caps, was Barry Trotz the coach? And he was not. He was actually still coaching the Predators at the time and didn't give Forsberg a whole lot of games in the NHL. He's another guy with term that would be great, but I don't think he's coming here. So so we'll just have to kind of wait and see where it goes, see who ends up here. I'm sure Lou is working the phones and talking to everybody as he always does, and we'll see. Like you said, it's a good point. Last year he got the right guy who's still here and, you know, paid the price, but you know what, I think they're, you know, we could all say they're a better team with JG Pageau on it. So
I think that's the right way to look at it. It's like if he and Barry Trotz identify someone, they'll pay for it. Like they'll get whatever the package that needs to be traded for. JG Pageau was traded for him, and look at where it got us. So, that's what's great about this. And, the other good thing is like the Islanders have bought themselves time to kind of, like you said, like sit out the market a little bit and make that Sebastian Kolberg trade. And a big part of that is because of like the rise of Oliver Wahlstrom and just the way the team's playing in general. Like there's no reason to panic and be like, we need to rescue the season. Like last year when, you know, they similarly were well positioned and then forgot to score. And then, Andy Green and JG Pageau were traded for, and then the world stopped. But, there's no, you know, pressing need right now, to go out and just like hit a panic button and get Kyle Palmieri. And like, they can wait and they can relax and let the kind of chips fall where they may. But, you know, as fans, we're fans. We want to see action. And so if something big happens tomorrow, that'd be great.
Mm, yep. We shall see. We have until the 12th of April to sit on the edge of our seats.
Yeah. Except for the other thing you keep hearing from up north is Kyle Dubas is he's going to do something quick because he knows the quarantine rules. It's like they're just like nudging him. Like, hey, Kyle, did you know that your player needs to quarantine for 14 days after he gets traded? You might want to make a trade soon so we can talk about it. Like, please do it.
I mean, they don't need to make a trade. Jack Campbell is here to save the season. He's backup goalie wins two in a row. But like, it's like being the backup quarterback for the Packers, right? Or whatever it was. There's always it was a thing like the, oh no, I think it was the Eagles. Like, you know, what's the best job? It's backup goalie for the Red Wings and backup quarterback for the Eagles because you're the superstar. Everybody loves you, you know, because you're the guy who's going to save them from themselves, and it always works out. I guess it worked out for Nick Foles, but other than that, it hasn't worked out for too many other guys. So, all right, yeah, so we'll have to see what happens. I completely forgot before. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. Put your Twitter handle in the review itself so that you can enter for a chance to win some eBay swag. We've only got a couple this month, so the lanes are wide open. And if you've already sent one in, please don't send in any more. Like, you know, I know it's a contest. We're all having fun here, but like, let's try and get some other people a chance to win. But all you got to do, leave us a review. Hopefully it's a good one. And put your Twitter handle in there or even your Instagram handle or whatever. And we'll find you and we'll put your name in a virtual hat and see if it comes out. Maybe you can win some cool eBay stuff.
Yeah, we did. We've had two winners, one of whom has yet to respond. That's Mikey Calarco. I'm trying to send you some eBay swag, so reach out to me so I can send it to you. I don't know where you live, so I can't just guess. So if you hear this, please respond. And but Carl Misitano, who won our first one, our inaugural giveaway, sent me a great picture. I'll send it to you so you can post. Oh. It was I don't know if I should spoil the surprise of what it was listener, but
no, but yeah, please. Picture. So if you're hearing this, go to lighthousehockey.com, read the article, and you'll see what he won, which is pretty cool. Oh, boy, I don't even know. I'll be honest. I don't even know what it was. So I can't wait to hear it and see the picture. So thank you very much, Carl, for the picture. And thanks, Mike, for doing that. What's your Twitter handle again?
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski with two E's. You can follow me at Culture of Losing. Read Lighthouse Hockey every single day. Listen to PT Isles with Joe and Noel. They had a great one last week. It was a lot of fun talking about how memorabilia changes an awful lot when you get older. And I definitely hear everything they were saying about having hockey jerseys, having a closet full of hockey jerseys, and then all of a sudden being like, I'm not wearing any of these. Why do I still own these?
I'm in that phase right now. I'm considering going in on a Lubomir Vyšnovský Slovakia jersey. So
did you buy that? Oh, you
haven't bought yet. I'm thinking about it because like I do want it, but I kind of like if I kind of want a Lubo Islanders jersey too. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'll probably buy it.
I had a jersey. And I lost it. Well, after July 1st, 2018, all of my Islanders t-shirts disappeared. I don't remember what happened that day. They must have been all abducted by aliens who needed clothes to blend in, to walk the earth undetected. And I don't know where they all went. I had a Strite. I had a Vyšnovský. I had a Hosang. I don't know where my Hosang jersey went, but I got to find them. But anyway, yeah. So, thanks for listening. Really appreciate it. Big week coming up. Could be a game on Thursday. We don't know. Best of luck to all the Islander, well, Noah Dobson and any of the Bruins that are on the COVID list. So we'll have to see how that goes. Saturday in Pittsburgh, though, is still on. So that's a huge one. The Penguins aren't going away, even without Evgeny Malkin, who's week to week. So that's a big one. And we'll be back sometime. Then they play the Penguins again on Monday. So probably record again next Tuesday. But we'll be back again after that. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk to you later. All right, bye-bye.